With roll call. Oh.
Yep, you've got, no, you go, you go on these times. Or your phone.
I was looking at the clock on the computer.
No, you.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a few minutes here to go, or a few seconds, I should say. Okay, it's officially 9:30, so we'll begin the meeting with roll call.
Director Cox?
Right on time. No worries.
Get in the gate.
Director Cox?
Present.
Director Page?
Here.
Chair Ramirez?
Here.
Directors in remote, we have Hoffman, Limbaugh. Staff present in the boardroom, we have General Manager Adnan Anaptawi, Charlene Endron, and Kenny Souza.
With that, I'd like to move on to item number two, approval of the agenda, with the exception of item number seven, which will get pushed back to the next LLC meeting. We're having some technical difficulties with that one, so we'll put it on the next agenda.
No problem.
Good.
The move was passed, so passed the agenda. We'll move on to item number three, approve the minutes summary for the Legal, Legislation, and the Community Partners Committee meeting of September 23rd, 2025.
We're good.
Yep, it was good.
With that, we'll move to item number four, federal, state, or county representative district report.
Good morning. I don't believe we have any representatives here today, with it being on the third instead of the fourth Tuesday. I think they had some scheduling conflicts, but thank you very much.
We'll move on. Item number five, update by the state advocate of issues at the state level.
I believe we have Brenda Bass. There she is.
Yes, yes, I'm here. Hi, good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Well, we are officially in interim recess up here in Sacramento. The last day for the October to take action on, or the last day for the governor to take action on bills was October 13th. He dispensed with, I believe, around 900 pieces of legislation this year. That moves us right along into kind of the retrospective on a couple of the the bills that we were tracking a little bit more closely. So the first one was AB 1089 by Juan Carrillo. That was a bill about the Western Joshua Tree Conservation Act. It was basically allowing CDFW to delegate authority to the city and county to streamline permitting for take of these trees if in the context of an industrial or commercial project. That's similar to the delegated authority that currently exists for residential developments, as well as for public works projects. That bill was vetoed. And the reason for that was that the governor believed that the bill went too far to authorize essentially what he says a blanket removal of Joshua trees near these developments, and that was not something that he felt comfortable signing at this point. So he understood the intention of it, trying to, give a little bit of flexibility and streamlining, but ultimately couldn't authorize that type of take. So that's what happened with that bill. And again, this is only for industrial and commercial projects. The existing, delegated authority for public works projects is untouched because that's existing law. In better news, SB 72, the Senator Caballero bill that was modernizing the California Water Plan to include long-term supply targets for the state to plan toward, was signed by the governor early into the signing period and chaptered. So that's a great win for water planning. It's a bill that Mojave's been engaged on in supporting for the past 3 years, first when it was SB 366 and then in its final form in SB 72. So very good news on that front. SB 454 was an AQUA-sponsored bill by Senator McNerney. It created a PFAS mitigation fund and program within the State Water Board. That bill was vetoed as well, and the message on that one was that, you know, the state already has programs that are supposed to assist, you know, water districts in complying with water quality standards, so he felt that a new fund that's specific only to PFAS was unnecessary. And then the last two bills that we've been tracking are two-year bills, so they can't move again until January. That was SB 601, which was the Water Quality, Port Cologne, and Clean Water Act modification bill by Senator Allen, and then SB 445 by Senator Wiener, which had to do with streamlining permits and approvals by various special districts and local governments for transit projects, including high-speed rail. Like I said, both of those bills were two-yeared in the assembly, so we shall see next year if they're what's going to happen with those bills, how they're going to move forward if they are, and what sort of changes are being made. So that's kind of the highlights that I'm happy to take any questions. Yeah.
Any questions?
I did have a question. Let me find it. Sorry, I'm looking for my notes here. I had a question on SB 827, Gonzalez. That was signed by the governor. That was kind of a sleeper. I'd never heard anything about it until I saw that it had been signed. Do you have any background on that?
Yeah, I don't think I had looked at it either. Let me see if...
And that bill addresses mandatory training for electeds related to basically financial competency. Not that it's a bad bill, it just, you know, encumbers additional training. And I just not heard anything about it, not from CSDA or AQUA prior to it being approved.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't look like I go to AQUA and CMUA as well, and I don't think they ever spoke about this. It does look like the League of Cities had some concerns with it, but it doesn't, and the Association of School Administrators, they both wanted some amendments to it, but it was, yeah. So it doesn't look like it really was something that was tracked by our special district association. So I don't have much more information on that one. I apologize.
Oh, no worries. It just was kind of a sleeper. It just got approved, and I started reading about it. It's like, wait, this requires two more hours of training in addition to AB 1234 for elected officials. And It's not real clear on who's supposed to provide the training or what even the specific elements are in the training, because with AB 1234, it had very specific items that needed to be addressed in the training. So, and I'm wondering too, who is it that is going to develop the criteria for the training that is now mandated under SB 827? Maybe next month, if you have anything on that, you could bring it back to us. I'd be real interested in that.
Absolutely. I will see what I could find out.
Thank you so much. Yeah, Jesse.
Any questions, Mike? And no more further questions. Thank you for that report, Brenda.
Thank you.
With that, we'll move on to item number 6, update by federal advocate of issues at the federal level.
Perfect. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
So you've got me, Letitia, and my business partner, Jean Denton, and then also Susan Paxson's on the phone with us, and happy to be with you all this morning. As you know, we're in a federal government shutdown. It began on October 1st at 12:01 in the morning, and there are a number of people who have been deemed essential, so are working without pay. We feel very comfortable that they will be back paid, but there's a lot of discussion about that as well. I just lost my notes.
Maybe it lost its funding.
maybe it got furloughed. Yeah, exactly. So on September 19th, I think you know, the House of Representatives passed a continuing resolution, a stopgap measure to fund all of the agencies until November 21st. And Speaker Johnson has indicated that the House will only come back to work in Washington. They're all working in their districts when the Senate works to reopen the government. The Senate has rejected every single day, in fact, the Republican-backed Clean CR that would fund the government till November 21st. Two Democratic members and an independent senator have crossed the aisle to vote for it, but it's still every year, every day, it's 5 votes short. So they were also voting on a proposal that the Democratic senators put forward to extend the additional COVID benefits for the Affordable Care Act for healthcare benefits. And that has also failed to get the 60 votes needed in the Senate to get cloture. So, I mean, that's the brilliance of the Senate. They need 60 votes, so you have to get bipartisanship going. So that's remaining in place. There are some bipartisan talks of moderate senators going on behind the scenes about extending the Affordable Care Act benefits. The Chairman Appropriations Committee has come back to D.C., and they're hoping to have some kind of plan to be able to move individual appropriation bills. As you know, there have been funding clawed back by the OMB director, and then they've begun reduction in forces. And at least 4,000 civil servants were notified on October 10th they were being laid off. These reductions are at DOE as well as EPA. And then, as I think you all know, the Bureau of Reclamation Commissioner, Ted Cook, withdrew his nomination. We have not heard any more information about his potential replacement. But they did do a number of nominations about 2 weeks ago. About 100 of the, you know, second tier folks were nominations passed the Senate. We are told by the chairman of the Appropriations Committee that the next bill they want to move is a 3-bill minibus, which would be transportation, energy, and water, which is where the Bureau of Reclamation money we compete for is, and then also the interior bill, another bill we watch very closely for the agency. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions?
I'm really curious on Ted Cook, the unspecified issue on his background check. I thought he would have been a good candidate.
It's interesting. There was some opposition that was growing, and he withdrew because he believed the president was going to withdraw.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
No further questions. I think that's it. No more questions.
Great. Really appreciate it. We like our monthly call that we have with the staff as well, and we'll continue to update you electronically and with our weekly reports.
Appreciate it. Thank you for that report.
Bye-bye. Absolutely. Thank you.
With that, we'll move on to number eight, item number eight, public information monthly activity report.
Good morning. Happy October. Let me share this screen. I think we're good. Yes. All right. This is my favorite season. So happy fall, everybody. As you probably know, this will be our last LLCP meeting of the year because of the way the holidays fall, so I get to cover quite a bit today. And in addition to our fun fall holidays, it also brings Water Professionals Week shortly after October 1st. So hopefully you saw the social media marketing. I hope you had a chance to comment, like, share in any of our social media posts that Kenny put together for all of our different platforms. You know, he always does such a really great job with that and spreads that awareness. On the slide, you can see some of the examples of the marketing that we put out just to create that awareness for Water Professionals Week. And internally, I do want to kind of give a shout out to our Employee Activities Committee, because we also honor that here in the office with just nice little things for the staff, activities, even if it's just some special iced tea in the break room. Just, you know, it's good to have some celebrations sometimes. So I personally just want to thank all of the employees that help make that special for us. A few weeks ago, Kenny and I attended the third annual CAPIO Leadership Summit. CAPIO, in case you don't recall the acronym, it stands for California Association of Public Information Officials. And different from the big annual conference that we have, this leadership summit started 3 years ago, and it's a very intensive couple of days with strategic workshops and closer networking opportunities that are just so valuable in the public information space. So I was really honored to be chosen as one of the presenters for this year's summit. And I got to share my perspective on authentic leadership in public communications. You've probably heard that as a buzzword, authenticity. It's been used a lot lately. And I was very, really fortunate, and I lost my place. Anyways, it was rewarding to niche that down just for public information officials and what that looks like in the public communication sector. And side note, as a presenter, my registration was free, so we got to save a little bit on the budget for that, so that was good. And then also free was some decals that I made for the presentation that I'm going to pass down to you after I'm done. Just to remind people to be authentic. Now, oddly enough, in December, I've also been asked to speak at the Communications Committee at the AQUA Conference, where I will share with them our communication and public outreach strategic plan that was built on that ACES in their places philosophy. So enough about me. I now want to brag a little, well, a lot, about my team. A couple of weeks ago, we got to go down to the CAPIO Star Video Awards ceremony, where we took home two awards. Mojave Water Agency was nominated in two categories for the first time ever, and that was for videos that Kenny put together on our Strategic Partners Program. We've shown that video here at this meeting, so hopefully you guys recall that. And out of 667 entries across all categories, we took second place in the social media short form campaign, and we took third place in the water specific category. So lots of praise, and thank you, Kenny, for such a wonderful job. Well done. All right, moving on. Now I'm going to sing Liz's praises, and who is also here. And she's going to love every second of it, whether she wants to or not. She coordinates so many of our special events, and one of them was earlier this month in coordination with our Alliance for Water Awareness and Conservation group. We had a booth at the Home Improvement Show at the San Bernardino County Fairgrounds, October 3rd through the 5th. It's a three-day event, and this very collaborative venture with City of Victorville Water Department, San Bernardino County Special Districts, and Mojave Water Agency running that booth. We were also aided with setup by Liberty Utilities and City of Hesperia Water assisted with that event. And lots of moving parts, and Liz created a special game. You can kind of see here in the pictures. This was all her brainstorming and creativity, and we try and mix it up every couple of events so that they're not just walking by year after year doing the same activities. So Liz brainstormed and came up with this really cool matching game, and had a lot of, these were before the event opened, but had a lot of interest in that, and it adds to our public engagement, public awareness, and public education. So thank you, Liz, for that. And then also, both Liz and Kenny were out at the Hellendale National Night Out. It was out at the Silver Lakes Community Park on October 11th, and they have vendors and food trucks, and I believe that this is in lieu of the big national event that's done in August, probably just because of heat-related issues and things like that, but they do their own thing on a Saturday in the park, and so they were both there for that, representing the agency. So thank you to both of them for that. And then I'll give you a short update on problem solvers. Again, this is a huge team effort that we all work on together, but I may steer the ship, but my team does so much of the rowing. We are going to be checking in with some of our problem solvers to film their update on their progress. Now, as a refresher, problem solvers is an annual competition that we host for middle and high school students, and they work as a team on a real-world water problem. This year was a little bit different and less technically based on a water problem, and instead of limiting the competition to three teams, we have 11 teams participating, and we've asked them to create a multifaceted conservation awareness campaign. We know, and we are getting the message that when you ask teenagers, students, what they want to be when they grow up, they want to be influencers. They want to be influencers, and that's what they say 90% of the time. We want to connect that with the science of water, and so they are having sit-downs with our technical experts and engineers, and they have several requirements, and we're really excited to see what they bring to the table and how they marry that water science and bring that awareness to the community. So anyways, we'll be out there with the film crew next week, and we're really excited to see what they come up with. Let's see. We are in Water Summit season is what I call it, because we also have our essay contest that we are running. The finalist will end up being a speaker at the Water Summit. This year, we received more than 70 essays from several school districts in our service area. So not just one or two, we got them from all over. So we were really excited to see that the awareness about that is spreading. So we have judges that have already reviewed, and they've chosen the top three finalists. Those finalists will then be paired with a community mentor to help them turn that essay into a formal presentation that they will give in front of a live panel. and the winner will be presenting at the Water Summit. So it's very, very lots of moving parts. And again, the whole team has to work on this because it's multifaceted. I think that's my last note on that. Before I move on, I do want to make sure that I ask my team if I forgot anything. No, we're good? Okay. All right. Here, we have another online workshop coming up, and this is our virtual class, Thursday, November 6th. It's just an hour, but it will teach any of the participants to protect your home from freezing, your irrigation from freezing. We really want to make a difference in not seeing as much water loss due to that, so they're going to get a whole session on that. It's free. It's online. Information is on our website, and feel free to register at any time. And that is our last virtual class of the year. So then we start our new calendar in January for our events. But like I said, this is our last LLCP meeting for the year, and we have quite a few things coming up. Many of them I've already spoken about, but I do want to highlight that we've got career fair season coming up. A lot of the schools, and not even just high schools, we have college, we have elementary schools that we've been to one already, middle schools. And so we have a lot of that visibility coming up, but it's less about the visibility and more focused on showing the students that there's a future in water. We want to create awareness about jobs that are available and get them thinking on those terms. So with that, I think that is all I have to share, unless anybody has any questions.
A big congratulations to your team for those CAPIO awards. Good job, Kenny. Your work is just such a huge addition to what we do as outreach with the agency. Thank you.
Kudos to you all. You have an amazing team, and it shows.
Love my team.
With that, we'll go to item number 9, public participation.
Not at this time.
General Manager's report, item 10.
Morning. Yeah, just one quick update. If you recall, I want to say now a year ago or so, related to the Delta Conveyance Project, there was an effort to pursue some geotechnical work, and it was held up in the courts basically due to a claim that they were trying to, the DCA and those who are doing the Delta Conveyance Project work were trying to fast track the project and piecemeal it and receive feedback from the Delta Stewardship Council that geotechnical activities weren't what they call a covered action or having something to go through a Delta plan review process. And the trial court upheld that and placed a preliminary injunction on work related to geotechnical activity. That caused a lot of issues related to scheduling and sequencing, which we were able to work out, but still, nonetheless, is a blow to the project and kind of represents what we've been seeing with this, right, this continued litigious process we see. That was appealed, and the Court of Appeals ruled in favor of the project, saying piecemealing does not apply to the Delta Reform Act, and further, that geotechnical work, which is investigatory in nature and not a permanent project, is not a covered action under the Delta Reform Act. So really one of the few bits of good news I've seen on this in some time. So I wanted to share that with you. That ruling came in Friday. And so next step will be to go back to the trial court and get the reversal on the preliminary injunction so that geotechnical work can go through. This is obviously very important when you have a major project like this to understand what your risks are and the significant kind of the significant proportion of risk on projects, mega projects of this type are those subsurface, right? What we don't know and what tunneling will look like. And so good news, just wanted to share that. And that concludes my report.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, that is some very good news. Anything that pushed this project along is very favorable. With that, item number 11, comments, discussions, items for next or future agendas. Good. With that, adjournment. Thank you, everyone.